KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. The reigning All-American downhill speed record is held by a citizen of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes who cut his teeth on the slopes of Durango, Colorado. An Ojibwe man has skied in every one of North America's largest cross-country race for the past 50 years, and a Lakota skier is working for the sport to be more inclusive of Native people and history. All three are on our show today to talk about skiing as a way to improve people's lives. We're back after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Klamath tribes, which are comprised of the Klamath, Modoc, and Yahooskin people, have sent help down to Southern California to fight the massive wildfires. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
The Klamath tribe sent a Type 3 fire engine and crew down to tackle the Eaton fire, which was nearing 14,000 acres Thursday night. The incident command post is at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. William Ray Jr. is chairman for the Klamath tribes. He says the crew will be on the fire line no later than Friday morning.
You know, we had a lot of help in Oregon, in our backyard, from Southern California crews, and we're just returning the favor in their time of need and want to just show that the tribes are supportive with our crews that we have available with all Indian spirit of giving.
Ray says the Klamath tribes and U.S. Forest Service will jointly be sending a second engine and crew down before the weekend. Both deployments are equipped for 14 days. More fires are expected across Southern California due to ongoing dry weather and powerful Santa Ana winds through early next week. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
On Thursday, Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin said in a social media post that a team of Navajo wildland firefighters has been deployed to Southern California to help battle the fires. He says the Navajo Scouts, a team of 23 members, including a female firefighter, are highly trained to fight fires like these. Members of the team are from various communities across the Navajo Nation. In Alaska, a Kodiak Island resident has been honored with a national award for environmental leadership. One of eight awardees, Natasha Hayden, was recognized for her work advocating for Alaska Native fishing rights. KMXT's Davis Hovey has more.
When the Center for Rural Affairs in Nebraska contacted Natasha Hayden to tell her she'd won a national award, she says she almost thought it was a scam.
Also in the you know, today's climate of where people are reaching out to you to try to get you to send them money and send you your personal information, there is quite a bit of skepticism about it. It's like, oh, somebody's cold calling me basically to say you've won this award.
But the award was real. It acknowledges a range of advocacy work Hayden has been doing for Alaska Native people on Kodiak Island, including her tribe of the Native village of Afognak, for years. Over those last 10 years as a tribal council member, Hayden has focused on fisheries advocacy and stewardship of marine mammals around Kodiak Island. Hayden is also part of the Kodiak Island Tribal Coalition, which represents the Kodiak Archipelago's 10 tribes. She says various villages in the region have lost 50 to 100% of their commercial fishing permits and a larger outmigration from those communities over the course of a few decades.
Seeing this severe negative impact and working towards restoring access to those fisheries that are right outside of our back door has been primary, and it's intertwined with everything.
Hayden says she is building on the resource management work that was done by generations preceding her, which she says future generations will take up as well.
And I take a huge amount of comfort from the belief that the Aleutic people have been here for thousands of years and that we're still going to be here in 1,000 years.
Hayden will receive $25,000 as part of her 2024 Environmental Leader Award. Other awardees include a Meskwaki artist and farmer from Iowa, an indigenous food sovereignty advocate in Louisiana, and a Diné environmental scientist in Arizona. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Support by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaskans shape a brighter tomorrow since 1922. Learn more at FNBAlaska.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Ross Anderson set an American speed skiing record in 2006 that still stands today. He rocketed down a mountain at 154 miles per hour. Connor Ryan is another downhill pro skier who is turning his love of the sport into outreach to inspire young Native people to give it a try. And at a slightly slower pace, Ernie St. Germain discovered a love of cross-country skiing after a friend asked him to be in what would turn out to be the largest cross-country race in North America. St. Germain has been in every American Birkebeiner race for the past 50 years. These are just a few Native skiers you might see on the slopes. They also work to promote this winter sport in Native communities. They're joining us this hour, and you can participate in this conversation, too. Why do you ski? Have you ever skied? Do you want to try skiing? Whatever your connection to the sport, give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's now meet our guests. Joining us from Lake Tahoe, California is Connor Ryan. He is a professional athlete, a skier, and a filmmaker. He's Hunkpapa Lakota. Connor, good morning and welcome to Native America Calling.
It's great to be joining you today.
It's great to have you, Connor. In our Albuquerque studio, we have Ross Anderson. He is the All-American record holder for speed skiing and a multiple Hall of Fame inductee, including the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Hall of Fame and the North American Indigenous Athletic Hall of Fame. He's Chiricahua Apache and a member of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes of Oklahoma. Hello, Ross. Thank you for coming into the studio and also bringing your wife Juanita with you.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be over here. We are looking at each other and just enjoying this. Thank you.
It's great to have you both. And joining us now from Hayward, Wisconsin, is Ernie St. Germain. He's a tribal elder, former tribal judge, and founder with the American Birkebeiner. He's Lac du Flambeau. Ernie, welcome. Great to have you on the show also today.
Ah, bonjour and dinoué magani doug. Greetings, all of my relatives. Good to be here.
Good to have all of you. Greetings to you as well, Ernie. And Connor, let's get into this conversation. This is sure exciting, talking about skiing. Do you remember when you first got interested in the sport?
Yeah, for me, I grew up in Colorado, and it was something that was always around and visible. I grew up mostly raised by my mom, who was Lakota, but my dad was a white guy who moved to Colorado to be a skier, and so it was something that he raised me with that opportunity to get into skiing. And you know, as I grew up and got older, I really realized how it overlaid with my culture, and it became something that became my purpose in life.
Well, for anyone who has never skied before, or even people who have skied in the past, I can
you know, the thrill of just descending down a snowy mountain at a very fast clip. And what does it do for you, though? What is the feeling you get when you're on the slopes?
For me, I think it's a sense of freedom and creativity on the mountain and in nature that just, it gives you ability to express yourself in cooperation with the land. And for me, that was something that I hadn't really found in any other form besides skiing, or at least not, you know, as in a way that was so fun and really just like became, you know, a passion in my life. And so, yeah, it really became a goal for me to make sure that all Native people can find a way to access this, because, you know, the whole sport here happens on our land.
That's a good point to make. Happens on our land. Connor, you're a professional skier. What does that mean? What all does that entail?
For me, it means traveling different places, making films, and, you know, I do a lot of, like, photography, videography stuff to both, you know, I take pictures, you know, when they make a trail map or a brochure or a flyer for the mountain, or do the marketing kind of stuff. You know, I'm the guy in the picture, making a turn in perfect powder snow or flying down the mountain. And so it gave me the opportunity to kind of be a representative of the place and the sport in that way. And, you know, for me now, it also means doing a lot of work to add our story to the narrative of the sport. You know, so much of skiing and how people appreciate it is through filmmaking and watching it on film. And it occurred to me pretty early on that, you know, everybody was doing this sport on Native land, but they weren't really telling stories that included our history and our culture and our connection to these places. And I just felt like that's a lot deeper, that our roots run so much deeper in these places where the sport is happening than everybody else. So it's really been my goal to tell stories that represent the whole history of these places, but also represent a future that includes Native people, Native youth, you know, and our cultural knowledge and context that exists here.
What you described to me sounds like the ultimate dream job, Connor. And tell us more about what you do to foster this awareness that these ski resorts, this is Native land that we're talking about, and what it takes to engage other Native people to embrace the sport of skiing.
Yeah, for me, I've done a lot of my work with Winter Park Resort, where I live in Colorado, and with Icon Pass, which is the biggest, or I guess the second biggest, one of the biggest pass companies in the country. They have over 50 destinations, different mountains on their pass. And so I've worked with them to do a scholarship program that gives passes and gear and lessons to Native folks across the country. And we've grown that from our first year, 4 years ago. We were giving away 10 passes and scholarships, and now we're giving away up to 30 a year. And we're continuing to kind of try and grow that. And a lot of that started with working with Winter Park, where they were one of the first ski areas in the country to do a land acknowledgement. And when they did a land acknowledgement, they were very clear that they wanted it to grow beyond that, that to them it was just the start of a process, which I think is a really important context, you know, to a land acknowledgement, is it just being step one. So in my work with Winter Park, we grew that to then include a program that brings kids from the Denver area, Native kids, through a program, a nonprofit there called Spirit of the Sun. And they bring up kids 4 or 5 times a year to go skiing at Winter Park. And then that kind of continued to evolve, and we decided to do an art installation across the mountain at Winter Park that included Arapaho language and Cheyenne art and signage and an installation that was designed by Ute and Danae and Cheyenne artists, so that people are skiing on the mountain, they're given these very visual reminders that they are on native land and that the snow that they ski on is more than just something to have fun with. It's, you know, what will become the water that flows into the Colorado River and gives life to so much of the West. And we wanted every skier to have an understanding of how sacred that connection is and how important, you know, environmental stewardship is in that place, because we as indigenous cultures have always valued water, you know, Mini-Wichoni, water is life. And so we wanted everybody to start being able to embrace that through our understanding of those things. And and now Winter Park this year has added, working with Tokabe, our, you know, indigenous restaurant that we have down in Denver. Mm-hmm. And the food from Tokabe is served across the mountain at Winter Park, so that when you buy a cup of bison chili on the side of the mountain, it's also growing the distribution system and the ability for native farmers and ranchers to scale up their own food sovereignty. And so it's really involved just over time building these relationships and trying to make it more and more meaningful and impactful, so that, you know, the guest who's coming to Winter Park for the first time is having a really unique experience, getting to experience indigenous culture a little bit, but then that that cup of chili that they buy, or that wild rice bowl that they buy on the side of the mountain, it helps our communities on reservations across the country be able to feed ourselves as well. Because, you know, skiing at the same time as being really fun is also a massive economy in these states where it happens. And as indigenous people, it's, you know, I think we have a right to put ourselves in that space and sustain our communities with the abundance that comes from the land and the snow.
Connor, what you are saying, I think, is resonating really powerfully with our listeners. And what impresses me a lot as well about you and these other people, these partners that you're working with, is you're coming at this from multiple angles. I mean, it's not just about, yeah, you've got these programs to encourage Native kids who might not be able to ordinarily access the sport of skiing. You've got opportunities and programs for them, but then, you know, the whole food sovereignty element and Tokabe, you know, a very famous brand across Native America, Native food restaurant there in the Colorado area, Denver area. So this is really impressive, and I really appreciate you kicking off our conversation right now today. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back. We have other skiers on the show today, and let's get some calls going, because I know we have some people who are listening to the show right now who are also skiers. So we'd like to hear your background, your story, what you love about the sport. 1-800-99-NATIVE. That's the number to call. Ted Nolan worked his way up from a rural reserve in Ontario to a professional hockey playing and coaching career. Along the way, he had to push back against racism and discrimination on and off the ice. He's turned his passion into outreach for Indigenous youth and documents it all in a book. We'll hear from Nolan as our next Native in the Spotlight on the next Native America Calling.
Heshe, Elia Nishi, Yam Ketsa Nishi, Tonatea, Tononatonice, Manna, Asna Tonis Ayuya, Nakadian, and Tonisia Makwabos, Awa Shuap, Tuta Isto, visit healthcare.gov/coverage, Kinawa, Nanta Tonis, 1-800-318-2596, and Penan Akadawa, Lukia, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Tonan Penanitu Lokanawe, Elakwa.
We're glad you're tuned in to Native America Calling. We're talking about skiing today. Downhill, cross country, slalom, take your pick. There are different types. Let us know what your favorite kind of skiing is by calling 1-800-996-2848. 1-800-996-2848. Let's talk skiing today. And our next guest, Ross Anderson, is in the studio in Albuquerque. And Ross, geez, introducing you earlier for the show, and you have quite a resume here. Let's start with this record that you set, and it still stands today, 154 miles an hour skiing down a mountain. I can't even imagine what that must be like. What goes into setting a record like that, brother?
Well, it's a lot of hard work, of course. You know, from the very beginning, I started when I was 3 years old. Grew up in Durango, Colorado, you know, had that niche when I started racing at 6 years old. You know, the thing that I realized when I was around my teenage years was I didn't see anybody of color in the World Cup division or on TV or the Olympics or whatever that, you know, classified for skiing. And I've, you know, everybody needs a role model. And, you know, that was my thing is, I, you know, track, you have Billy Mills, Jim Thorpe, but you really didn't have a skier in my eyes that I was able to adapt to what my skin color was or my culture. So I made it a point to just get out there and just at least make that effort to be on a World Cup circuit or on the U.S. speed ski team of any way. And just to be present was my goal. I didn't realize I was going to do what I've done and succeeded to where I'm at now. So that, definitely a lot of hard work.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you go 154 miles an hour, I mean, Ross, you're flirting with death at this point. I mean, one wrong move and it's lights out. I mean, what's going through your mind and what's the preparation that goes into this?
I'll tell you, I mean, anything over 50 miles per hour is dangerous. with that type of speed, it takes years to get to that level of concentrating and get into that vision, that out-of-body experience, where you're able to slow things down in your mind and what you're seeing is slower than they really are. No fear, you know, but you do have fear, and that's what makes you a better skier, is having that, a little bit of that fear to work with and be good at it, not great, but good at it, where you're able to go up that next level of your comfort, because you're out of your comfort zone and you're realizing, you know, the faster you go, the more out of control you can be, or you can be in control. You know, you work that on that a lot, and that's your mind, body, and spirit.
Oh yeah. This spiritual element you're describing, that's really inspiring. Your wife, Juanita, is there in the studio. I'd like to get her into this conversation. Juanita, what do you think when you see your husband flying along on a pair of skis moving faster than a Ferrari?
Well, I think he's amazing.
I hope so. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Do you worry, though?
No, I don't worry because, you know, especially with different things we've talked about and that we've shared, with dreams and different things is a calling and, you know, being chosen and surrendering to that. And there's a peace and a confidence in it because, you know, that there's something greater, that's guiding you and protecting you in all of it.
Are you also a skier?
Ross is teaching me how to ski.
How's that going, Ross?
Well, I'm having a good time. You know, that's the one thing about skiing is you should always have fun with it, no matter what. You're in the beautiful Mother Nature, you know, really enjoying what nature is, what native land is, and just having fun. And having fun with somebody like my wife, it's just, it brings a whole nother level of enjoyment. You know, competing most of my life, you kind of get burned out on it. And I took 9 years away from skiing, did a lot of golfing, which was good, but you know, skiing life, I was really burned out. But just getting back into it now, it's actually, I'm really enjoying it better and realizing what it was all about from the beginning.
That's a pretty dramatic pivot to go from, you know, speed skiing to golf. But I mean, just getting out there, being in nature and being active, that's what it's all about. And so, Ross, you shared, I mean, you've been in this sport since you were a toddler, 3 years old, and folks like you and Connor, you're going out and you're engaging with other native people to embrace skiing. And are you seeing an increase in native people taking up the sport?
I mean, I definitely am seeing it more, especially with the programs that some of the tribes do have that are encouraging the youth to get out there more, providing, you know, programs providing clothing and gear and resorts, you know, reaching out a little bit more. You know, I really see a difference from, you know, 12 years ago, 10 years ago, when I first started my ski programs. You know, that was one of the things that I did with my programs, was to get tribes from other places, Oklahoma, the Four Corners, of course, and especially the ones that never have seen the mountains before, to come up to realize that they're going to be going on top of that mountain that they're looking at when their eyes are so big, they can't even believe how big those mountains are, and then realizing that they're actually going to be skiing down it. You know, it's one of those mini European vacations where you're going to get out of your comfort zone. And if you, you know, go down that slope, then you basically accomplish something that you thought you never had before, that anything's possible in your life. And, you know, maybe that's a, you know, a way of finding what you really want to do in life and strive for their dreams or their goals.
We heard Connor describe, he draws a lot of connection between what he does on the slopes with his native culture and spirituality. Do you do the same, Ross?
I do. You know, I, you know, you always have to appreciate, you can never take it for granted on where you're at and what you're doing. When I was competing, you know, I was open about me praying before each competition with my medicine bag, and, you know, when by the finish line and was out there on my own and kneeled down and picked up snow and prayed and, you know, asked to be on that land and that at that competition in Europe, you know, no matter where I'm at, that's what I did. And, you know, prayed for everybody to have a safe race and just letting Mother Nature and spirits know that, you know, we're here for competition and we don't take it for granted at all.
Now, I think if we think of skiing in the context of the United States, there are certainly a lot of ski resorts in Native communities or close to Native communities. We have this Native American connection perhaps to the land here in the United States, but you've traveled all over the world and you've gone to places where there are other indigenous populations. Do you make connections there between the indigenous people in those countries, in those areas, and the sport of skiing?
You know, some I do. You know, when I went to Finland, where we raced was in Sala, Finland, which is in the Arctic Circle, and there are natives up there. And, you know, it was nice because I was, you know, doing the tour for 17 years that I was, you know, I was getting known, and I was starting to meet people and, you know, looking forward to seeing them again, time and time again, you know, anywhere really. And, you know, they became friends and got to know the culture of the country and their native ways of doing things. And, you know, it's definitely remarkable that I had the opportunity to do that and appreciate, you know, other cultures as well. And it's similar to what we do, and we value that. And we take things, you know, we appreciate things and not take it for granted.
And like Connor, you also have a lot of irons in the fire here. You're working on a clothing line. You've got a book coming out. Tell us about some of these other exciting projects. And it sounds really like you have a brand.
Yeah, I do. You know, we're basically having a foundation. We're going to call it Raja. My wife and I really talked about this. You know, the book, that's going on forever, it seems like. You know, I've been trying to do that for 5 years now, and hopefully that'll be complete soon. I'm looking forward to seeing that. But the clothing line, you know, definitely, you know, we really discussed that a lot, that, you know, I'd like to have Juanita, you know, discuss more about that.
Yeah, Juanita, please do.
So the clothing line is very, very special to us because I lived on the San Carlos Apache Reservation for about 4 years and participated in Holy Ground ceremony and practiced traditional, taught by the Chiricahua Apache. And there's so much clothing out there that has a lot of the native design because it looks beautiful, but they don't understand the symbolism. And because I've been a part of the community, I've lived among the people as a people, even though I'm Jicarilla Apache. My hands have been blessed by Medicine Man in the Four Crosses on Oak Flat, and I've ran on the Mount Graham run with the people there. So I understand what these symbols mean, and our holy ground is all about bringing nations together. And so these symbols can be taken and used appropriately and in a way that's honoring and can bring people together, but then also give back to the reservation and to these people where these beautiful inspirations come from.
And Juanita, when you and Ross travel and you share these programs that you have and some of these products, what's the response from Native people as well as non-Natives? Do they embrace what you folks represent and what you're encouraging?
Absolutely. I mean, I think for me, you know, I want to stay very humbled, but very honored that I can connect with the people there because I'm not just trying to come in and make some kind of claim, but I come in with respect, and I did a lot of learning and a lot of humbling for a long time. And so I have, you know, been accepted by these people. I've been told, because I have lived among the people, like the people, that I am a voice for them. And so there is acceptance there. There is respect returned. And then for a lot of non-natives, because I'm mixed, I was part of the assimilation. So my mother was French and my dad was Jicarilla. I can connect with both. And so the non-natives, a lot of them are interested in the story because I grew up in Colorado in white schools. And so it's interesting to hear how I grew up with the same type of education and how that completely changed in understanding and feeling when I went back and willingly lived on reservation.
Ross, where are some of your favorite places in the U.S. to ski?
Boy, you know, every mountain has its own reason. No matter where it is, Colorado, even New Mexico, Ski Apache is owned by Mescalero. You know, it's a really nice place. Santa Fe, Taos. You know, like I said, there's no really favorite, but there's always some particular reason for it. Either it's the culture or the mountains or the way it's shaped, the hills, anything. So, you know, I just enjoy wherever I go, and always look forward to meet people, new people, and maybe take a run with them too.
The topic today on the show, skiing, and we have native skiers on the show, very accomplished native skiers on the show, and we've got the phone lines open for folks who would like to join the conversation. If you yourself are a skier or you're interested in skiing, maybe you'd like to give it a try, maybe you'd like some advice on how to ski or how to try it out for the first time, we've got people on the show today who can give you those answers. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-996-2848. Ross and Juanita, do you folks have children?
I have a daughter. She actually is going to school at St. Thomas University for softball. Full scholarship on that. And she's going to be graduating this year. So I'm looking forward to seeing that in Florida. So, yeah, it's really, really cool. And she's very gifted, and I'm just amazed with her. I'm very proud of her.
Now, what advice do you have if somebody listening to the show right now is like, geez, this is pretty exciting. I think I want to try. Maybe they're not up for trying to set a world speed record on the ski slopes, but they'd like to just try it out, maybe get on the slopes for the first time. What's your advice? Where do they start?
I'll tell you what, you got to be, you know, do what you want to do. And skiing is, or snowboarding, you know, you just enjoy it. And realize that you can do whatever you want to do. You know, be confident, knowing that, you know, it's a new thing, but there's a reason why there's a new thing, because, you know, you got to learn somehow. It's, you know, if you don't try, then you don't know. You got to thrive with pride and, you know, be you. That's where you first start. It's all that confidence level, and go from there.
I think what might worry some folks is the possibility of getting injured. What can you do to reduce the chance of getting hurt out there?
Well, I mean, you always take your steps of, you know, knowing your ability, stretching, you know, workout, just make sure you're in shape. But at the same time, just take it easy. You don't need to, you know, go fast and break records in the first day. Never do that, you know, just enjoy life.
All right. I like that. Enjoy life. We're going to take another break. We're going to come back, and we'll talk with Ernie St. Germain, who is another skier joining us from Hayward, Wisconsin. And give us a call if you'd like to join the conversation as well, 1-800-996-2848.
Looking to exhibit, enhance, or share your artistic talents and cultural knowledge? Crazy Horse Memorial has artist residencies, performance opportunities, and more. Application deadline is January 31st at crazyhorsememorial.org, who support this show. See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com. The Alaska Native Art Auction Gala is March 21st, 2025 in Anchorage, Alaska. Please consider donating art and help Kowanic Broadcast Corporation raise needed funds. Kowanic Broadcast Corporation's mission is to be the leader in bringing Native voices to Alaska and the nation. With your support, we're able to produce such programs as National Native News, Native America Calling, and more. Donor forms and more information about the auction can be found at knba.org. Anyone who donates art before February 14th will be automatically entered into a drawing to win $500.
When you file online for your Permanent Fund Dividend, every Alaskan can support great causes, including Native America Calling. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM, Kowanic Broadcast Corporation. Through your support, you can help us make a difference in our community when you pick, click, give for causes you care about. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Are you or someone you care about looking to take their education to the next level? Native Forward Scholars Fund is here to help. With awards up to $30,000, Native Forward Scholars Fund is dedicated to supporting Native students as they pursue higher education. With Native Forward Scholarships, you can overcome financial barriers and open doors to a world of opportunities. Native Forward Scholars Fund, working to build a brighter future and empower Native students one scholarship at a time. Info and applications at nativeforward.org who support this show.
This is Native America Calling. We're talking about skiing today, and we're also talking about improving Native participation in the sport. We're going to talk with Ernie St. Germain here in just a moment, but before we do that, we've got Chanupa on the line, and he's up in Pine Ridge at home in South Dakota. He's listening on Keeley Radio like he always does. Big brother, thank you for calling in. Are you a skier?
You know, I wanted to tell you something about some of my people a long time ago. And one of them on the reservation here was Joe American Horse and my grandmother, Cecilia Martin, okay? Both of them have records, and they can never be top it, those the Clark Kingfisher. Now, what I wanted to give to all of the people, even the girl that was talking with her husband, okay, and their baby, I want to say Wopi La Tanka Ichichap in Lakota, in our land. Okay? This is what we're going to tell them. Ampeto kile chantewashte woke onkilapi. Naha wakhanja lena tako ichupi hanta wak sape kehe onkichupi. Chahena wakantanka hena echa yanke. See, our ancestors will always do for our little ones, especially our little girl that he's told that he was graduating. So, Wopila, and I hope they do call me. I want to sing a song for that little girl. Maybe another show from coming on. But thanks, Sean, for everything our people are doing in the understanding of our way of life. And thank you. Wopila Tanki Ichicha. Ha-ho!
Right on, brother. I always enjoy, I always love to hear you speak in your Lakota language. And Ernie St. Germain, he's our next guest who joins us, and he's in Hayward, Wisconsin. And Ernie, cross-country skiing, that is your specialty, that is your forte. And for people outside of the state of Wisconsin, or maybe not very familiar with the cross-country skiing world, tell us more about the American Birkebeiner.
American Birkebeiner was started in 1973 by entrepreneur, businessman here in Hayward by the name of Tony Wise. He had, back in the 40s, after World War II, he had started a place here just to the south of Hayward called History Land. It was included logging camp and log rolling, and it included cook shanty. And then he invited the local tribe and elders to build a authentic Indian village. And next to that, Apollo Grounds. And every 4th of July, there was a huge gathering. Tribes from all over would come for that powwow held at History Land. At the same time, Tony created Mount Telmark, which was an alpine ski area about 20 miles north of Hayward. And that became an amazing, amazing attraction. People from the Twin Cities came here every weekend, and there were huge crowds skiing on the hill, and the alpine area got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it was more of a local area for them to go to quickly from the cities, and it grew and grew and grew. But Hayward is known for Norwegians. It was one of the places they settled, being loggers, and there were a lot of Norwegians here, and Tony himself had this Nordic background. These old-timers continually teased him and encouraged him to include what they called real skiing. And by that, they meant Nordic skiing. And they would tease him, and the word they used for alpine skiing was alpiners. they would tell him enough of these alpiners. Now you have to include real skiing, Nordic skiing, skiing cross country. And it's a whole different technique. And they continued to encourage him. And finally, in the early 70s, he decided, okay, I'm going to do it. And he brought some Nordic skiers from out west and from Sweden here to Telmark, and they designed a ski trail on the property. And so in 72, they started building that trail. And by 73, in the fall, they convinced him that he needed to have a race. And they had it model it after the Norwegian Birkebeiner, which goes back 800 years of history of Norway. And they knew that history, and they wanted to bring it to life here in Hayward, Wisconsin. And Tony Wise was their man to do it. And so they went through the woods from Hayward all the way up to Telmark, and finding old logging trails and connections, back roads, fire roads, they decided on a course from the log rolling bowl at Historyland to Telmark, to finish at Telmark. And I can't tell you exactly the distance, but it was going to be 55 kilometers, which is about 34 miles. And what they did, they cleared it. And then when the snow came, the night before the race, they took a snowmobile and drove that snowmobile on the course. So there would be a path to follow. And the week before the race, I happened to be doing my practice teaching here in Hayward for my degree. And this old Norwegian told me to come to his house, and he was smiling. He said, "My boy, I wanted to do Tony's race." And his wife yelled from the kitchen, "No, Lyman, you are not going to do that race." And he grinned and he smiled and he says, "I wanted to do the race, but Edna won't let me." He said, "My boy, you're going to have to represent me." And being young and foolish, 25 years old, I said, "Sure, nothing to it." And I had never cross-country skied before. I've done a lot of alpine skiing out west and at Telmark. So I'd been on skis, but I had never been on cross-country skis. And the difference is the heel is not attached to the ski. And the Nordic ski, if you take an alpine ski and cut it down the middle, slice it in half, that's about the width of a cross-country ski. It's got a special binding on it, on the toe, and that's all that's attached. And so that Saturday before the first race, he had me try them on, and I skied on them a little bit and said nothing to it. I had no idea where we were going. So I got my best friend to do it with me, and the next Saturday, we were on the starting line, and I yelled at Lyman, "Where do we go?" And he said, "Don't worry, I'll pick you up at Telmark." And my friend Dave looked at me, and he said, "What did he say?" And the cannon went off. And we just followed the trail and followed other skiers, and we ended up at Telmark.
Wow.
Over 30 miles through the woods on a snowmobile track. And from that beginning to, it's actually 52 years now. This would actually be the 53rd year since that first race. Two races were canceled because of lack of snow. So last year was the 50th race. And there's been dramatic changes in skiing and equipment and grooming, the width of the trail. It's grown to quite an industry. It's an amazing event that thousands of people every year look forward to coming here, and they train year round in order to accomplish this race between the two towns.
Yeah, Ernie, this is so inspiring just to hear you describe it. It's just getting kind of like a trial under fire. You just jumped in there, and next thing you know, you're racing, and it's 30 years later. I want to take a call, and this is someone who is also in Hayward, Wisconsin. This is Daryl, who's listening on our partnering station, WOJB. Hello, Daryl. Thank you for calling in today. What's your comment?
Bonjour, Ernie. It's great to hear you talk about the start of the Berkey. I used to be with the Ski Patrol for about 19 years, and as part of that, I was part of the Birkebeiner Ski Patrol Board of Directors, so we got involved with our end on the first aid and covering the trail for the racers. And Ernie, for us as LCO tribal members, is a great inspiration. I can't imagine being out there every year as he has done. It's an awesome thing that he does. Another thing I'd like to add is that a lot of people don't realize that these guys that started the skiing industry, actually, such as Tony Wise and Skiing Out West, were members of the 10th Mountain Division during World War II. And they got training assisted with the Ski Patrol and Out West, Camp Hale and such. But they brought back those sports, those activities, and that enthusiasm to develop so many things, running, cross-country running, skiing, of course, and the downhill skiing industry. But it's great. We, in my family, we've had as many as 17 family members and extended members skiing the Berkey. And we actually, what I think is always interesting to talk about how great the Birkebeiner is, being the largest cross-country ski race in North America. We also hold the second largest cross-country ski race in North America, and that's the Barna Berkey, which is all the kids under 13 that ski that, and that's fantastic to watch. They ski through the golf course and come down the main street in town. But it's such a great activity, and the two hardest things about doing that race, and Ernie will back this up, is wondering what the trail conditions and snow conditions are going to be like, and then wondering what wax you're going to use.
Daryl, awesome call. So much history, so much experience, so much background. Thank you, Daryl, listening on WOJB in Hayward, Wisconsin. Ernie, trail conditions and needing to know the right kind of wax to put on your skis. Would you agree those are the major questions that one confronts?
Oh my, it's always a dilemma. In those first 3 years that I skied the race, I was on wood skis, and you had to put pine tar on that wood in order to protect, keep the moisture out, and then you applied wax over. And the first year, I didn't know about waxing. I didn't realize there was such a thing as wax or pine tar. And at the end of that race, I think I was just down to bare wood. And normally when you put the pine tar, that wood ski is dark brown. Well, mine was just clear white. I was skiing basically on wood. So, but I didn't know. I didn't know any better. You know, just falling up the hills with my hands and knees and going down the other side, crashing at the bottom.
I mean, some of this stuff is not, you just have to, it's just experience. You just learn it as you go, and you make friends who help you out.
Yeah.
Well, Ernie, this year, 51st Birkebeiner, what's your plan?
Well, no, it's not. I'm going to be 77 years old, and certainly people have skied it at 77, and even 80. People in their 80s ski it, and for me, I'm diabetic. I've used the lifestyle, you know, of the Birkebeiner to stay healthy. And one of the cultural I don't want to call it goal, but aspect of our life that Ojibwe people work hard to achieve is what we call Mino Bimadizi Win. And that's a translated, literally means a beautiful life. But it's more than that. It's a healthy, balanced, positive way of life. And that's how we should, everyone should live our life. The Birkbeiner certainly has made it possible to do that, because every day the Birkbeiner becomes a way of life, and you never stop thinking about it. And the day after the race, of course, you rest, but you're thinking about next year, and you're thinking, you know, about training and staying active and staying healthy and staying strong. Biking, roller skiing, pole hiking, hill bounding. It's just something you do year round, and so you stay healthy. And just as important is staying well, not getting sick. It becomes a way of life, and I think every Birkbeiner skier becomes that. It just changes your life. And so that has helped me get through, and it's helped me maintain my diabetes. Well, 50 races. People ask me, how did you ever do it? And I really can't say how we ever did it. When I think about
it. You just made it happen. You just made it happen. Ernie, I'm sorry we're out of time. We're going to have to wrap this conversation up, but I appreciate you so much sharing all your knowledge and all your experience along with our other guests. And with that, we're going to call it a show. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our producers are Andy Murphy and Sol Traverso. Joe Thompson is the UNM Local News Fellow. Marino Spencer is the engineer. Sho McPolin is the digital producer. Nola Daves Moses is the distribution director. Bob Peterson is the network manager for Native Voice One. Clifton Chadwick is our national underwriting sales director. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor for National Native News. Charles Sather is our chief operations officer. The president and CEO of Kwanic Broadcast Corporation is Jacqueline Salee. Have a safe weekend. I'm Sean Spruce.
Repatriation is the return of ancestors and stolen culture. The Association on American Indian Affairs and the Tunica Biloxi Tribe will host the 10th Annual Repatriation Conference, February 25th, 26th, and 27th, 2025 in Marksville, Louisiana. The conference will provide expert hands-on training about domestic and international repatriation. Registration and more information available at indian-affairs.org. The Association on American Indian Affairs supports this show.
Support by AARP. If someone asks you to buy gift cards to pay off debt, it's a scam. Imposters will claim your Social Security number's at risk, or your utility company will stop service due to late payments, or you won the lottery and only need to pay some upfront costs. They'll say the fastest way is to buy gift cards and share the numbers on the back. Anyone who tells you to pay a debt with a gift card is a scammer. More information on gift card scams at aarp.org/giftcards.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.